Welcome to That's Not How a Baby Sleeps, the podcast where parenting meets hilarity. I'm your host, Alicia Dyshon, and I've got the fantastic Eleni Katsinas as my co-conspirator in all things baby and toddler sleep. We're not your average sleep consultants, no cry it out nonsense or sleep training at all for that matter.
So first thing we'll talk about is let's just discuss how long we have both nursed or have been nursing for. So Eleni, you can go first.
So I nursed Nora since, you know, the day she was born, and I nursed her until she was over a little over 2.5.
Awesome.
Yeah. I always nursed her for like every nap and bedtime. Mm-hmm. And then she stopped napping between like 2 and 2.5, I think, because I held the boundary of like, why only nursing for sleep? And she's like, well, then I'm not napping anymore.
Smart girl. Okay. And I nursed my oldest, Aylin, to sleep until she was about 2.5 years. We didn't fully wean until she was almost 3, and I'm still currently nursing my 2-year-old to sleep. She's 2 today. We are planning on weaning soon, so we thought that this would be a really good episode to cover. We get so many questions around weaning, and it is such a complex topic, and really temperament does play a lot into it. So we're going to do our best to kind of give you guys an idea on like where to start and how to kind of approach this difficult topic. But we got a whole bunch of questions from our community, and I think going through each question will really allow us to kind of give you guys a whole picture and some ideas on how to go about weaning. So first question, when did you know it was time to wean? So I was pregnant with my second, and I just wasn't really interested in attempting tandem nursing. Props to anyone who can do that, but that was just not gonna work for me. And also we had a 3-year age gap. So my oldest, I feel like she was ready for the most part. It was a little bit of a parent led change. But yeah, like it did go really well when we finally did. And Eleni, why did you stop nursing? When did you know it was time to wean?
Well, I wanted to wean for like a while, like I guess when she started almost 2 and like around 2, and I know my goal of nursing was always like at least until 1, and I'm like, all right, I made it to 1, so let's try to make it. I just kept going, you know, I made it till, I make it till 2, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna stop at this, and then there's like always an excuse to not stop. But then like bedtime nursing kind of stopped working, like she didn't really want to nurse to sleep anymore. We're in a rocking chair and she's getting really big to like nurse to sleep, so I was getting super frustrated with that and felt really burnt out from it. And it was actually kind of getting a little bit painful for me, like personally, like I didn't feel comfortable. Like she was just like, I was done. I was ready to be done.
you were just ready to wean. I was the same way with like the age thing, is when I first had my oldest, I was just hopeful that I could breastfeed. And I was like, yeah, like probably 6 months. And I had no education on breastfeeding at all. So I was like, oh, like, there's a lot of benefits. So we kept going, and I was like, okay, till a year, and then 18 months hit. And then I said 2 with her as well. But we were like mid COVID around the 2-year age gap. So I was like, oh, well, you know, like we'll just keep going. Antibodies.
Yeah.
And we were home. So I just didn't really, I just kept going. And then I got pregnant. I was way too tired to wean when I initially got pregnant. So we just kind of kept going, and I knew I did want to wean before my second was born. And it was a really long, long, slow process. And I know it was the same with Nora as well. Like you did it very, very gradually, which we personally think is usually that's the easiest way to do it. I think that's why it went so well for both of us. And also the age thing definitely helps too. Next question. Where did I even start with weaning? So Eleni, you can go first. I feel like your approach was a lot more like detailed.
Yeah, I guess it was. I was feeling like burnt out and kind of frustrated by it. I'm like, I need like a step to like be like, okay, we're done. I'm not gonna just be like, all right, we're done, that's it, like deal with it. So I heard from a lot of other moms, and I guess just an idea of getting a toddler weaning book. It was called Loving Comfort. I got it from Amazon. It's a really sweet story. It was about a story between a mom and her son, and just about the process of weaning. And you know, each page talked about like daytime weaning, like nighttime weaning, and then just weaning all together, and talking about how the toddler was getting bigger, didn't need milk anymore. Very emotional for me to read that book. Yeah. But it was really sweet. Like we just read it one night, And then I'm like, all right, it's time for bed. And I asked if she wanted to nurse or go in the crib. And she just said crib. And she fell asleep in there, like holding my hand through like the bars of the crib. And then I'm like, that was the first night I like didn't nurse her to sleep unless she like fell asleep in the car. I like, you know, like I always nursed her to sleep before bed, or at least attempted to nurse her to sleep and then like lay her in her crib. And then I was like, well, the next night I'm not going to nurse you because we already like did that. And like, I grieved that like process. Like I was emotional. I'm like, oh my God, like my baby's not a baby, like whatever, like I'm over it. So I'm like, I can't go through that all over again. Personally for me, I'm like, I grieved the weaning journey. Like we're done. So like the next night she was a little upset with like me saying no. Maybe like that first night I just got lucky. I don't know. But she had some emotions with it. I supported her emotions, you know, like told her my milk was all gone, and then she wanted to come in our bed. So I think that was her new association, was like laying with me and like cuddling instead of nursing. Yes. So we did that for a while. I felt like it took a little bit of time for her to fall asleep initially, and then it was just like our new routine. Like she would come lay with us for a minute, and then we'd go in her crib and she'd fall asleep.
And she'd fall asleep. Okay, so she didn't usually like fall asleep in bed with you guys and then you transfer. Because I know sometimes that is an approach that you can use.
Exactly. And sometimes she did, sometimes she didn't. It all depends on what was going on. I mean, like we talk about, I don't mind her in our bed, but I just would bring her in a crib or she would fall asleep with us. I think she just wanted like the comfort of next to me. She would fall asleep because, you know, the crib's that barrier of the bars. So like I couldn't be in her crib with her. Totally. So yeah.
And it also like she probably also had that association, like falling asleep in your arms, like in the rocking chair probably would have been a little bit more difficult just because she probably associated the nursing with the rocking chair. Like, would you agree?
Yeah. And I got rid of the rocking chair because I literally couldn't even look at it without like getting emotional. Like, that's where I nursed her every night for like 2.5 years of her life. You know, I'm like, even like her, like she stopped using her sleep sack the same week too, because it was an association. We'd get her sleep sack on, she'd go on my chest to be nursed in the rocking chair. So like all those associations just like were gone. And then I had to figure out new ones. I'm like, well, I don't even know what to do from here. I'm like, I never have done this, you know?
Insane. You guys had to like put together an entire new routine association and everything. That is a good approach and stuff to take, because I think there are a lot of things that pair together with nursing to sleep. They kind of go hand in hand. Lovely. And it's so funny because you feel like it went a lot better than you thought it was going to go.
It did. And I feel like, I guess I could have like layered associations beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like we always tell clients, and like, I actually didn't do that. I just like said it was done. It was done. Like, I will do this with you instead. Yeah. So I guess I kind of went backwards. Like I would have layered those associations with it, but I just never did that with like our bedtime routine. So like we both were learning how to like figure out how to fall asleep without nursing. And that's when like my partner Dave really came into the bedtime routine more. Like he would lay with us too, and he would even start rubbing her back. So like that was actually nice for me to like get a little bit of a break and like, okay, now you can put her to sleep because now she doesn't need me like she used to.
And you don't need her like that. It's so sweet. Oh my goodness.
So sad. I'm gonna relive this and cry all over. No, it's been happy tears. Like, you know, it's a great journey. I'm happy I did it as long as I did. It was a beautiful,
and it ended in such a lovely, like, nice way, right? And like that's one of the big things, and we'll talk about it a little bit later about, you know, introducing negative things around nursing to try to stop it. But I think it's so important to kind of end the journey when you're ready to, so you're not having a ton of resentment around it. And you still, you know, look back on it fondly.
And I think she does too, because she still to this day, randomly, she'll be like, I miss nursing. Or like if I'm
Aylin
like,
will too. Yeah. And she's 5 now. So
I know. And they still think of that in a good because she comes across that book too. It's like still I'm like, I should probably put that somewhere else because I don't want to keep reading it to her. But she does have good memories of that. Even like a month after that, she was like, I had a dream about nursing. I was nursing and I loved it. I'm like, oh, it's so sweet. It's so beautiful.
Oh, that's so lovely. And I always like, if Aylin says that to me now, I always look at it. I'm like, oh, you're probably seeking some connection time and stuff. So we'll have some snuggles and everything. And because that is such a huge thing for a toddler. It is that connection time and just being close. And constantly we're told that, you know, oh, nutritionally they don't need it, you know, after a certain age, and it still has nutritional value. Like, let's be honest, it's breast milk. But it is so much more about connection with toddlers. It's really the huge focus with that. So for me, where I kind of started with nursing was Aylin, she was older. So we just talked about it. I guess she was around the same age as Nora. I keep forgetting that because they are different in age, but at two, right, probably a few months after she turned two, I got pregnant. And I was honestly just too tired to make any changes around that. So she was on a floor bed at this point in time. So I would just nurse her to sleep at bedtime. But one of the places that we did start was just really the daytime boundaries. And it wasn't even necessarily around nursing to begin with. But we, and I know you, same thing with Nora as well, is like we have been setting boundaries around whatever and holding boundaries and supporting emotions since our kids were like 12 months and starting to have those big emotions. And I think that plays hugely into when we set boundaries around anything with our kiddos. You know, when I started to see, even with my second, I was like, oh great, she's like kind of getting to that stage where she's having these big emotions, temper tantrums around whatever it is. I'm like, perfect opportunity to start supporting emotions, holding boundaries, avoiding using distraction, and just allowing them to go through that entire emotional process. And Dr. Neufeld calls that the adaptation process. We talk about it a lot, but your child needs to have their tears around the things that they cannot change in order to adapt and accept and move forward. So that's always been a big focus for both of us, and letting our children cry, which I mean, sounds a little bit strange because we don't use sleep training to support the families that we work with, but there's a huge difference between supporting emotions in arms and with your child and closing the door on those emotions and expecting them to emotionally regulate and downregulate, which is just not a thing for young, small children or infants. So we always look for opportunities to support emotions. I mean, it's hard to do it all the time. I feel like there's kind of a happy medium where I'm like, okay, let's go like 90% supporting emotions, maybe 10% distraction. Like there's some times where you're like, I still support emotions in public, but there are certain times where you don't have time during the day to do that. So you might, you know, redirect or use some type of distraction. But most of the time we want to look for opportunities to do that. And that was, you know, something we did very early on. And then it kind of came into the nursing probably when I was, I want to say about 4 months pregnant. When I got through the morning sickness stuff and was starting to feel a little bit more like myself, I was like, okay, let's stop. I believe, yeah, I was still nursing like throughout the day, kind of on demand with her. So I started holding boundaries around that during the day and just saying no to nursing. And she generally took it relatively well because she knows that no means no most of the time. Now it's a little hit or miss now that she's five. She'll push the boundaries a little bit more with that one. But when she was, you know, two, it was a lot easier for that. So we said no. I cut down the daytime nursing. I essentially made it like nursing is just for sleep. So we still nursed for her nap if she was taking it. She was similar to Eleni. Eleni's daughter, dropping her nap between two and a half. So I kind of got away with the whole having to stop nursing for naps, which is usually a pretty difficult task because the sleep pressure is not there as much. So we recommend holding on to it for sleep for the first part. And then the next thing that we moved on to was nighttime nursing, and not nursing to sleep for bedtime. We still nurse to sleep for bedtime, but overnight, she was generally sleeping through the night, but if she did have a wake up, I would nurse her back to sleep, or early morning if she would wake up and like come into her bed or whatever it was, I would nurse her back to sleep. So I talked to her about this and I just said, you know, like when you wake up in the middle of the night, mommy's not going to nurse you back to sleep. And I remember exactly what she said to me. She said, oh, sad. And I was like, oh, that's it. Okay. So then the first night she woke up and I said, we're not going to nurse back to sleep. And I had a water bottle that I gave her just to make sure she wasn't thirsty. And we just laid down and she snuggled with me and she went back to sleep. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was easy. And I'm not saying it's easy like that for every child. Like we definitely did get pretty lucky. But we just cuddled back to sleep because she was on that floor bed. I just stayed with her in the bed and she went right back to sleep. So at that point we were at just nursing to sleep at bedtime. first thing in the morning because I was just absolutely exhausted. That was actually, I think, the sleep that I hold on to the longest was the early morning one, or like the like 6 a.m., 7 a.m. one, where she'd like come and like get into bed with me and I would just want a little bit more sleep. So I would like let her nurse and be half asleep myself. And then 2.5 was when we removed the bedtime nursing to sleep. And that was like a whole other long process. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, like we're not going to nurse to sleep at bedtime. And my goodness, it took her like, I want to say like over an hour to fall asleep. She was so restless, just moving around all over the bed, tossing and turning, and like just really trying to like, we're trying to develop new sleep associations and stuff here. So I think I was singing to her, cuddling with her, but it was just such a huge change. It took forever. And I, in the back of my mind, was like, trying obviously not to be frustrated. You have to do this when you're in an emotional good place yourself or able to regulate. But I just knew, I'm like, oh my gosh, if I could just like nurse her to sleep for like 2 seconds, she'd be asleep so fast. Like, why am I doing this? But I was like, nope, I'm holding the boundary. I'm not going to do it. And eventually she fell asleep. And then, you know, after a few days, the amount of time it took to get her to sleep, it shortened and got shorter and shorter until eventually we were just like snuggling and she was going to sleep. And my husband, he was always able to kind of put her to sleep. We introduced that probably around 9 months, supported a lot of emotions. It was a big deal. So she was always kind of used to dad putting her to sleep as well. But whenever it was my turn, I always nursed to sleep. So he was able to kind of take over, do some bedtimes. I was able to lay with her. It went really well. And then, yeah, the morning, early morning one was like the last one that we like held on to. And it kind of fizzled out a little bit on its own, to be honest. Like, I would just start like getting out of bed. Like when she would come up, I'd be like, okay, let's get up. And then it was just kind of gone. And then I remember thinking, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's been like 5 days and I hadn't nursed at all. And I was like, oh my gosh, did I like wean without kind of even really being like, this is the time I'm weaning? Cause I know a lot of people pick a date and I just didn't really do that. But I do remember the very last time that I nursed her, and it was actually for a nap. We had her third birthday party. It was a week before her actual birthday. And she had an earlier birthday. I think we did the birthday at like 10 o'clock. She got home, she was just wired, and we had family and stuff coming in, or well, they were staying with us, and I knew she was going to be up late and be super cranky. So I bribed her to take a nap with nursing. I was like, mommy will nurse you if you take a nap. And she was like, no. And then she kind of looked back and she was like, okay. And then that was the last time I nursed her to sleep, was for a nap. And she took a nap, and it was like for her third birthday. And then, yeah, then we were just done after that. But it was definitely a really long process. I think I said that I started around 4 months, and like her birthday is a month before my second was born. So I had a month break between nursing the two of them. So yeah, what is that? It's 9 minus 4. 6, 9. 5 month process, I guess. It went on for a while. But I mean, it worked for us. And I think it went so well because it was such a gradual transition. So if you have the time for it, we definitely recommend taking a very slow approach to it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like with us, we were like lucky. I don't want to say we weren't lucky, but I guess just like grateful enough that we did have that nice, long, gradual process of like weaning, because some people do have to wean right away for
abruptly
medical reasons or something going on in their situation. So like maybe that's why our girls did so well with the idea of it, because it was such a long gradual process and it was kind of like a natural weaning process. Like both of them and like us, like we did it together almost. You know, like they were weaning while we were weaning them. Like
yeah,
I want to nourish a self-wean. I don't know if you ever like thought of that with your girls. Like I was like, she's so highly sensitive. I never want to wean her. I just want her to do it herself. Like, it's going to be so hard to get her to sleep. But I had to do it instead of herself.
I think we always have these ideas in our head of like how long we want to nurse for and stuff. And things come up and they change. And that's the same thing with like anything that like medically comes up. Like sometimes you don't have a choice. That's not your fault. It's okay to make changes around things that are just not working for your family anymore. Yeah. This next question, what did setting boundaries around nursing look like for you, Eleni? Because I've already talked about that.
Oh yeah, you did. I don't remember like the exact age I like started kind of weaning her during the day, or just like, I guess, setting boundaries. She had to be in a toddlerhood, like maybe, I don't know, between like a year and a half, a little older. I guess when she was just getting older and bigger and like just coming up to me and pulling down my shirt and like wanting to nurse. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to just nurse you whenever you want. I'm like,
yeah,
this is my body. Like, if I don't want to nurse you right now, I'm not going to nurse you. And like, I was starting to set that boundary during the day. And I think that's when we shifted into like nursing's only for sleep.
Yeah.
And then we only nurse her for her one nap a day because she transitioned to one nap at like 10 months old. And then we would nurse for bedtime and I guess throughout the night when she did wake up. And then like I was telling you before, she kind of like naturally like night weaned, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like once you got older into toddlerhood, like throughout the night, like I remember just one night, I'm like, I'm not going to nurse you. Like when she woke up and she just didn't, she just like came in our bed and like laid with us, which was nice. And I feel like that too clicked in my head. I'm like, if I can do this at night, like I think I could do it all together. Mm-hmm. And I think it just like naturally kind of unfolded. Like I'm trying to like remember like the pieces that came together, like the timeline, and it all was like intertwined, you know, it all was around the same time. But I definitely think like holding boundaries, like saying no, I'm not doing that, like this is only for this, like really helped with like the whole weaning process itself.
For my second Luna, with her, we did kind of set daytime boundaries a lot earlier than I did with my oldest. And I think a lot of that had to do with my oldest just sleeping through the night for the most part, a lot earlier than Luna did. And I think her solid intake was a big component. So like during the day, Luna would kind of nurse on demand and stuff. And I really noticed that like, she just wasn't really that interested in solids. So I did start, I think it was 15 or 16 months. I started saying no to like nursing during the day. Nursing is just for sleep. And overnight nursing, like I had no interest in really like actually night weaning them essentially, but we always tell families that like the natural night weaning age is kind of around 18-ish months. So that always puts things into perspective for families. But she was still nursing at night if she did wake up. And so I really kind of focused on just it from a nutritional aspect, those daytime boundaries. And it really did up her solid intake, and her sleep actually overnight got better because she was eating more during the day. So that's kind of when we started with daytime boundaries around nursing with her. And she's very intense with her emotions, like 0 to 100. So I was a little bit nervous with that, but she's also a little bit more easygoing. So she goes from 0 to 100, but she chills out pretty fast. But in that moment, it's very intense. She gets very, very angry for such a tiny person. But she's able to kind of, we support emotions and she settles down pretty quickly. But that was when I was just starting to dabble with that. Like we started a little bit around 10 months, realized, oh my goodness, or sorry, around 12 months, realized that she's really intense with her emotions. Like she gets mad real fast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, the weaning process with her is going to be intense. And I think it might be intense a little bit. I'm going to start really soon, but yeah, there's also been moments where I'm like, oh, maybe it won't be that bad. So I'm hoping it'll be kind of like that, where it's like, oh, it's a lot at first. And then she just chills out and kind of accepts the boundary. So hopefully.
Yeah.
So tips for emotional regulation and weaning a highly sensitive little one. I think this is a big one for my oldest, and your Nora. Because Nora is highly sensitive. Aylin is pretty sensitive. I don't know if she's, I feel like she might be a little bit less sensitive than Nora, but I'm not sure.
I feel like they're sensitive in different ways.
Yeah.
Like Nora's definitely highly sensitive. And like when I hear other families, like, oh, my daughter's highly sensitive, and they give me examples, or like I see that child, I'm like, huh, like definitely highly sensitive, but not like Nora. Or like,
yeah. Different.
Other things affect them, and like that's why, like, even learning in our course, I was so nervous to wean Nora because I was hearing about stories of highly sensitive children. I'm like, oh my goodness, I had to nurse her forever. she's never gonna wean. I was like so nervous about it, but she handled it really well. So like maybe another highly sensitive child won't handle it as well, or like they might have bigger emotions like throughout the day from the weaning process. Like I don't know if Aylin did, but like I don't really remember Nora having like big emotions after the weaning process was over, you know, like during the day, or just like getting really upset because, you know, a change happened. So like a transition, like, so yeah, I don't know. I feel like it went pretty well.
Yeah. It's so hard because I think it mushes together for us because we were doing the whole weaning process right as she was preparing to be a big sister. So I was getting that summer before she became a big sister, I was getting reports from like daycare being like, she's very like a hair trigger right now, very, very, very emotional. And of course, they were so wonderful. One of her daycare teachers was like one of my very good friends. She was like, "It's very normal. I'm just letting you know that we are, you know, experiencing very, very big emotions from her." And she's like, "And I do think it's because, you know, she's anticipating this big change coming." And I'm sure probably some of the weaning stuff was kind of mixed into that, but I just didn't really like put two and two together. It was just everything kind of coming down at once for her. But yeah, she, and I mean, after baby sister came and stuff, it was like that instant relief for her. I think she really struggles with like at the anticipation of like the unknown, and then once it like sets in, she's like, "Oh, okay, cool, that's not so bad now. I can handle this." But like leading up to it, it's definitely really difficult for her. So she is, I would consider her highly sensitive with that. And I mean, I think both of us, like, or both of our girls, like, they're sensitive in the way that they're very like empathic. Like they can't comprehend like people being mean to one another, and like they'll watch movies and they'll cry, and like they're
For
so,
sure.
so sensitive. I love
Yeah,
it.
definitely Nora can feel other people's pain or feelings. I think
She's a
that's
little
like,
empath.
yeah, I think that for sure. But just even like seeing like the tips for like weaning highly sensitive children, like I guess with the straw cup, which is great for like the sucking motion, but Nora always drank out of a straw cup. So like I never like intentionally did that. It just like she did it. So I guess
Part of
maybe
our
that
day to day.
helps.
I think it definitely, from an emotional regulation standpoint, sucking is incredibly soothing. It moves us from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic. So that's one of the big reasons we recommend it. I think a lot of parents are like, "Oh, okay, like, yeah, you think the straw cup's really gonna, like, my child's gonna take that instead of nursing?" Like, all right. And I mean, maybe not initially, but it's really important that you're offering that throughout the day with whatever they're drinking, because that sensory in input that they're getting is going to help calm their nervous systems and even regulate them hours later. So it is helpful to have that in your day-to-day, like, to prep for that, you know, if you are nighttime nursing, or, you know, when you are daytime, or sorry, when you are nighttime weaning, or when you're daytime weaning, having that throughout the day and stuff, maybe not offering it in place of nursing if they're gonna just flat out refuse it. I mean, I think you can eventually. I think initially when you say no, they're gonna be like, "Eh, no, I'm not gonna take that." But once you're kind of through that, they usually do kind of start to accept that. And that's kind of what we offered overnight. I don't know if it was necessarily a straw cup, though. We think we used one of those silly, like, 360 cups, but still, like, that sucking motion. A straw is obviously better, but offering water and stuff throughout the night is definitely helpful when you are looking at nighttime weaning, because we still want to make sure that we're meeting all of those needs. Like, your kids are going to wake up and be thirsty sometimes. Like, that's normal. And I think we'll talk about potty training another time, but I feel like a lot of people recommend, like, don't give them anything to drink at night. I just think that's such a silly recommendation because it's crazy. I mean, yeah, it's kind of frustrating. You have to get up and take them to the bathroom, but I mean, usually I don't really have that issue. Anyways, that's a side topic. Sorry. just another tangent. But additional sensory strategies are also really important for helping regulate the body. So things like adding in motion for sleep, or even just during the day. I think a lot of the time we'll be a little bit worried if we, for example, we lay down and we nurse to sleep, and then suddenly we're like, "Oh, I'm going to use a rocking chair and like rock to sleep," and introducing another association. We really just want you guys to think of that as like a bridging association. Like, it's going to work for you guys right now to remove the nursing association, and then you can pull back on the rocking. But motion is incredibly regulating from a vestibular standpoint. It calms the nervous system. It's a positive thing. So adding that through for sleep before bed, and adding it throughout the day. So swings at the park. Oh, I'm actually really excited about this one. And I've one of the big reasons I've been holding off on weaning Luna is my parents are getting her one of those sensory swings for her birthday. I'm making my husband attached to the ceiling. He's not very happy about bolting things to the ceiling, but I'm really pumped about that, because I feel like it's going to be such a helpful tool for that regulation when we move into that weaning process, and also just that extra sensory input for both the girls to kind of calm and, you know, go to sleep at night. Deep pressure That's also a really good one. So you can do like deep pressure massage, obviously not too hard, but you know, that kind of stuff. Bear hugs, just going over your child's whole body from like head to toe and just kind of giving them that deep pressure, very calming and regulating. Heavy work is also a really big one. So that's things like pushing or pulling something. So we have like one of those like little wooden shopping carts and you can fill a bunch of stuff and push that around. Pulling things when like those medicine balls, those are really fun. You can pull those around. Anything weighted, really, really awesome. Climbing up stairs, you know, climbing up anything really, like those Pickler triangles. We also use like our play couch where we'll set it up so it's kind of really on a big angle and have the girls climb up that. Those are all really great activities for sleep, just because they are so regulating. So hopefully they help with your nighttime sleep, but they should help with the emotional regulation that your child might be struggling with when you're looking at weaning. If your child has any sensory processing differences or is just highly, highly, highly sensitive, it might be worth working with an occupational therapist. Obviously, we are not occupational therapists. These are just kind of basic tips that we're giving you for sensory processing differences and just sensory strategies. But they'll be able to actually look at your child's sensory profile and determine, you know, what areas they might be struggling with and different activities that would specifically pertain to your child and really help with that. So one thing that we do want to talk about is just daytime nutrition and weaning. If your child is waking up and they are taking a full feed at night, they're likely hungry. So that needs to be addressed first. We want to make sure that we are meeting your child's needs. Obviously, eating is a need. So during the day, solids, we are looking for 3 full solid meals a day, 2 to 3 snacks, kind of depending on what the bedtime milk situation is. Like, it is okay to offer a bedtime snack. I mean, a lot of this will depend on like timing of like what time your child goes to bed. Some children will go have dinner at 5 o'clock and then their bedtime's at 7:30 and you might not have time to fit in snacks and things like that. If your child goes to bed a little bit later, then you're definitely going to want a bedtime snack in there, especially if we are looking at removing that milk, that bedtime milk feed. So if your child is not getting kind of what we're recommending, we do definitely want to address that first. In some cases, when we have a toddler who is nursing all night long, we will see some reverse cycling. So that means that they're taking in more calories at night and they're refusing to eat during the day. So things are very unbalanced. So gradually reducing the lengths of nighttime feeds to hopefully shift some of those calories during the day. We can also look at just consolidating up those nighttime feeds. That's generally what we focus on prior to 12 months. We don't usually touch nighttime feeds until 12 months besides for consolidation. So if your child is waking up every 2 hours all night long, quickly nursing and going back to sleep, and they're not taking in very much food during the day, we want to work on, okay, let's offer, you know, a full feed next wake up, support them back to sleep a different way, offer a feed at the next one, and really just work on consolidating those up. Hopefully that'll shift some of those calories during the day and you'll kind of see that daytime nutrition up a little bit, but it is definitely really, really important that we are focusing on that nighttime nutrition. It is usually recommended that if you are planning on weaning, that speaking to an IBCLC, that is also a really important part. Eleni and I, we never did any of that, but it is recommended. Obviously breastfeeding, I do have a certificate for breastfeeding support and knowledge, but I'm not an IBCLC. Next question. How to go about supporting emotions overnight versus during the day? So as we mentioned, we do recommend working on supporting emotions during the day first. One of the big things with that is obviously we want to practice that during the day and avoid using that distraction, because you're not going to have that distraction overnight. Like, you're not going to be able to be like, hey, let's go watch a show instead, or hey, do you want a snack in the middle of the night? So we want to allow for those daytime emotions and to let our child go through that process. It doesn't mean that it's going to be super easy when you start supporting emotions overnight. Your child is used to nursing overnight. So it is definitely going to be a little bit of a struggle regardless, but we do think that it helps. One of the big things with this is just the fear of supporting emotions. like when you're in the thick of it and you start to say, for example, we recommend usually working on the first wake up at night and supporting emotions around that, saying no to nursing, it's going to take a really long time and we'll doubt ourselves. Like I think I said, it took me an hour plus to get Aylin to sleep the first time that we tried that. And I did doubt myself a little bit. I was like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? It's taking so long. But it is really, really important that you trust that this is going to work and it is okay to say no. And your child might be upset and cry for like an hour. And that's where supporting emotions comes in. You're sitting with them and allowing them to have those tears and go through that entire adaptation process. It's not easy to do. I mean, I think Eleni and I made it sound really easy because of our kiddos, but I think well, a lot of that's
how many months of like us leading to this point. Yes. You know, I feel like a lot of the times maybe with other moms that aren't supporting emotions throughout the day, or even like letting their kids go through these big emotions when they say no, like we, this makes us sound so mean, but we say no to our kids all the time. And like we've let them go through the adaptation process, like for a long time, I feel like leading up to it. So I think that's why for us overnight, it was so much easier because of that reason. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe if like we didn't ever do that, overnight would be so much harder because they're not used to like hearing no from us or like us holding a boundary over like something. You know, yeah. So I really think that personally, I think that makes like a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So. And I think too, when we take like a gentle approach to parenting, a lot of us take that approach due to how we were parented.
Yeah.
So emotions can be incredibly triggering for a lot of us. And it's not to say that emotions are not triggering for myself and Eleni. We talk about that all the time. Like we are not by any means perfect parents. We get frustrated. We have our own emotional outbursts and yell and all of those kind of things. We apologize every single time, but we are human beings and we're going through this process of reparenting ourselves from the way that we were initially parented. And like emotions can be very, very triggering for a lot of people. So during the day, you might be trying to stop all of those emotions from happening because a lot of parents will feel like if my child cries, I'm a bad parent. No, not at all. Your child should cry. They should be upset about things. Supporting emotions and setting boundaries is a huge part of building a securely attached child. If you let your child run the show, that's not a healthy attachment relationship. It's not what gentle parenting is. And we'll do a whole other podcast on gentle parenting, but it's such a common thing that we see where parents are so scared of those big emotions because of something that was triggering for themselves. And it's bringing up all of all of those big emotions for them. So they want to make those tears stop. It's one of the questions that we have on our intake form. Like, how do you feel about supporting emotions? Are they triggering for them? Do you feel the need to make them stop? And so many parents say, yes, I want to stop the tears immediately. And like instinctually, yeah, like we don't want our children to cry. But there's, again, a huge difference between I'm going to hold you and snuggle you and kiss you and support you through this big change. And I'm going to shut those door on tears, which again, sleep training is kind of that approach. There's a huge difference between it. At nighttime, supporting emotions might look a little bit different, but we try to get you to practice during the day and then just go for it at night. Set the boundaries, say no, they're your boobs. You don't have to do it anymore if you don't want to. It's your body. Yeah.
Thereby, I guess, like if your child's having a really hard time with that throughout the night, is like trying pauses and breaks with nursing and like even like layering other sleep associations. Like
pauses and breaks is something that we like to use for families when we know that mom might be a little bit dysregulated. And we also know that baby might be really, really struggling and they're kind of escalating to a point where they're really struggling to regulate. So that's when we're like, okay, I'm going to nurse you for a few minutes to downregulate you. And I'm going to pause, pop you off and support some emotions. They will probably escalate again. And then you would pop them back on for a few minutes, pop them off, support some emotions. Or if you ever feel like you're getting to a point where you're escalating too much, nursing is again, very calming for most people. That can kind of help you calm and come back to regulated and continue to go through this process. I will say some kiddos pauses and breaks can make them a little bit more frustrated depending on temperament, because it's like kind of that on and off. But essentially what it is you're using mirror neurons to develop a new pattern. So the idea is that your child is going to begin to kind of calm down a little bit between those intervals. It's like, okay, you know what? I'm not nursing right now, but mommy is still, you know, hugging me and kissing me and supporting me. It's not that bad. And the idea is eventually you will get them to sleep in one of those pauses. There are no time limits on these pauses. It's very fully instinctually based. I do think that one of the like the sleep training methods, like pick up, put down, it's kind of goes off of this. But with that sleep training method, it's like, okay, now you're going to go for 2 minutes, set a timer, and then you're going to pick up. Like, there doesn't need to be anything like that involved in this. I know some parents are very type A and they want a strict plan, but this is fully instinctual. You are, you know, supporting your child through this, following your instincts, nursing them a little bit as needed, and still kind of continuing to hold that boundary. But yeah. And you can use pauses and breaks for any associations, but for weaning, that's typically what it looks like. But one thing that we do recommend is, like, it's very rare that I will recommend a mom like fully night weaning all in one go. We usually recommend just focusing on the very first wake up. That's usually if your child is set up for optimal sleep when the sleep pressure is the highest. So you'll have more success with that. Wake up, it might still take a really long time, but your child, the sleep pressure is working with you for that wake up. So it might make it a little bit easier. So if you really want to, you can do the first couple of wake ups, but it is going to take a really long time. If you do the whole night, then you're very likely going to end up with a very tired, overtired child. It'll play into your day the following day, and you're going to be completely burnt out because you're up all night supporting emotions. I get that, you know, some parents have to do that, but if you can, doing it gradually, tackling one wake up at a time is usually the way that we recommend doing that. Thoughts on going away and having a partner night wean for you. So regardless of whether or not this works, you will still need to come back and deal with this emotional process and develop new associations when you return. Often we see these kind of approaches when there is a big fear of emotions. I'm not to say that this is a bad thing or you shouldn't do it, but especially if you have a partner who's very on board with supporting emotions and, you know, maybe wants to give you that break before you kind of go into the weaning process and come back. Like, maybe it can be a starting point for your family, but it doesn't mean that you're going to come back and they're going to magically night wean. I mean, I'm sure there might be some. I think you mentioned that your mom did this, right?
I think my mom did this with like multiple. I have 3 sisters. So I think she did it with a couple of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly like what happened, but I think she just had a fear of like the big emotion that came with like us wanting to, and she probably had a hard time saying no to us because she didn't want to make her babies and toddlers cry, which I understand that. So I think it was just so hard for her to let go of that. Yeah. But I feel like this might be okay for your partner to help you when you're like there too. Like if you're feeling stressed out and they help you with the night weaning, like, you know, taking turns, like the, you know, the first wake up of the partner can do it instead of you. But like you said, we still have to, as the mom or primary caregiver, you still have to support the emotion that you're not nursing anymore and figure out how to put them to sleep another way. So like, I think this is just kind of like a band-aid solution for like a night. And then you still have to deal with it when you come back. So I guess if a mom needs a break, you deserve it, but you still have to figure out how to put your kid to sleep. When you're never not going to put them to sleep again. You still have to.
On you now, dad, which I mean, yes. If it works for your family, we are on board, but you're very likely still going to want to put your child to sleep at some point and develop those new associations. And it doesn't, I mean, your milk might dry up over the weekend, but and you could tell them that, you know, the milk is all gone, but you could do the same thing and stay with your child. And I mean, it might be hard to sit in another room and let your husband or partner go through this emotional process with your child. It might be difficult, but I can almost guarantee most moms who, if they go away for it, they're still going to be like sitting there. They're not going to have a good time. I don't know how they would be able to relax, especially if it is such a deep rooted association. We will say that sometimes, you know, when little ones spend the night with a different caregiver, sometimes they do sleep better. Which I feel like it makes moms feel bad because they're like, well, I was the problem, and you weren't the problem at all. Your child just has that association with you, and especially like bed sharing families and stuff, like that's a big thing too, is it's normal for a bed sharing baby to lightly rouse, quickly nurse, and go back to sleep. Like, that is the biological norm every 2 to 3 hours or so. The reason room sharing is recommended for so long is because it literally regulates the child. Like, they will stay in a little bit of a lighter state of sleep. It's protective against SIDS, right? So that's why it's recommended for so long. So biologically, it is normal for a bed sharing baby to lightly rouse, smell milk, and quickly go back to sleep. So you're not necessarily the problem, but that is just the biological norm. And with, you know, your partner, that's not there. I always feel bad because I'm always like, well, it's kind of the less appealing parent. So they're like, they're not going to wake up as much because they're like, eh.
Well, yeah, they'd rather have like a nice nursing session than like a quick little pat on the back.
Yeah, they're like, whatever. And we see that with shifting sleep associations just in general is like, sometimes when we shift the association to a less appealing association, they're like, eh, and they might just start to sleep through the night. It's a possibility. I wouldn't say it's like, all the other sleep trainers will tell you that's why your child's waking up at night. And we see it all the time where families will wean and then their child doesn't sleep at night. They're still waking up, or they shift an association, their child's still waking up. And that's a lot of the time has to do with those foundations. Maybe those were not in place. Your child is either overtired, undertired, unbalanced daytime sleep, nighttime sleep, which is a huge component of this. If you're going into weaning, you want to make sure your child is set up for optimal sleep. If you haven't watched our free Sleep Without Sleep training webinar, that goes through that whole process. So definitely watch that. But it's not the answer to your child sleeping through the night. It's possible, but it's not always just the magical solution. So yeah. And then the next one, thoughts on lemon juice band-aids on nipples. Lemon juice, nope. That's gonna be a hard no for us. We're not judging anyone if you do want to take this route and stuff, but I feel like we were talking about this before the podcast, but it puts kind of a negative association on nursing, which I guess is the idea. But again, it's just, I really think it's just a band-aid solution to kind of avoid those big emotions. And it's a fear of like, I don't want my child to get upset. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. I just think it's kind of mean. I mean, like you said, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to judge any parents. And like, I never heard of it until you said it. So I'm like,
no, you were shocked. You're like, I'm sorry, what? I'm
like, I just feel like we just talked about, like, we both had like such a beautiful breastfeeding like journey and experience. And I mean, like the ending of it was beautiful. And like Nora still like talks about it sometimes, or like tells me she dreams about it or whatever. Like that's a beautiful thing. And like, if I put lemon juice on my breast and like, it's like kind of like teasing too, I feel like a little bit, right? I don't know. I feel like it's like, I don't want to do that to my kid personally.
Yeah, because it's allowing them to latch.
Yes. It's
not holding the boundary there. You're allowing them to latch, and then they're just like, oh, that tastes really gross. And now I don't want it, kind of thing. It's just not necessary at all.
No, you can support the emotion instead. And like you said, I feel like these parents maybe have a fear of those big emotions. Yeah. They don't want to deal with it. Like if I just do this, like they can just, they're not going to want it. Instead of, okay, just say the no, they're going to cry about it for a while. And I feel like a lot of parents don't want to support the emotion or set the boundary, because sometimes supporting emotions does take a long time. They might cry for a half hour. They might cry for an hour, but eventually it's going to lessen within time. And I feel like with our girls, it lessened within time. And like, that's why weaning was so much easier than maybe other families, because we supported emotions for so long. And like, they're going through the adaptation process and they're doing pretty well with it, because they're accepting, like, they can't change that thing that we told them, you know? So,
There's no quick fixes with parenting. Yeah. Like, you can do that and we could see it come out in a negative way later.
That's very true.
Yeah. Like it all kind of pairs together. So it's definitely not something we recommend. I know there was another one that said hot sauce or like chili. And I'm like, oh my gosh. First of all, like, I don't know. Like that sounds risky for my boobs, but.
Like, what if like a kid goes to daycare and like another kid's biting them, so they go and get some lemon juice and put it on their arm and the kid bites them? So like you're kind of teaching them like weird stuff too. I don't know. I feel like with kids, you have to be so careful of what you say and do, because you're teaching them things like down the line.
You're modeling
like,
that behavior.
Modeling different behavior. So you're showing, you know, so it's like you gotta be so careful what you do.
Really gotta watch yourself for sure. The band-aids, maybe. I feel like the band-aids, and like we will tell moms, if you have kiddos that are like, I am pulling down your shirt and I'm going, and you're trying to pull it back up, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes we'll have to be like, let's make it a little bit less accessible, but you're not actually allowing the child to latch. So I think that's the variation. Like it's a physical boundary, just like, it sounds kind of weird, but baby proofing, you know, like yeah. Most of the time when we're setting boundaries and supporting emotions, especially in those younger stages, it's around safety, right? So, you know, baby proofing, that's a boundary. And, you know, sometimes there's emotion around the baby gate or whatever it is, because they can't get to that. And that's where you kind of come in and support emotions. Like it is okay to set a physical boundary for some things. So I suppose the band-aids would be, would be fine, I guess. And, you know, if you want to wear a shirt that's less accessible, that would be a similar thing. I was actually telling Eleni that I have those like nipple covers that I wear under clothes sometimes, and I had to peel mine off over the summer quickly when my daughter was trying to latch. So those might be a good approach too, because I feel like the band-aids, they could rip them off, things like that. But
I feel like a band-aid would be painful to like wear.
Maybe that would be painful. Yeah, the little nipple, the pasties or whatever they're called. Get some of those if you're really wanting to hold like a physical boundary. That would be an approach. I mean, it might actually, it might work overnight. Because it's just smooth then and you can't latch on. It doesn't work. You should have seen the look I got when she tried to latch. I was like, it's not there. Sorry. but like, yeah, like it would be okay to have a physical boundary, but I don't think things like lemon juice or hot sauce to deter your child from latching on is a good approach. We wouldn't recommend it. So next one, how to go about night weaning when they wake up every 2 to 3 hours. So there is a difference between shifting sleep associations and night weaning. Honestly, night weaning is not, we don't touch night feeds until a child is 12 months old. And even then, we're still iffy on it, depending on what daytime nutrition looks like, all of that kind of stuff. Like you could nighttime wean, as we said, and your child could still wake up a ton at night. And then you also don't have that nursing association, so it makes it harder to get them back to sleep. So you've lost your tool at that point. So we, again, always recommend looking at those foundations. Sometimes wake ups every 2 to 3 hours overnight can be an indication that there's something off with the foundations. They're overtired, they're undertired. Usually undertired, I would say, with every 2 to 3 hours, too much daytime sleep, wake windows are off, things like that. So making sure that that stuff is in place before attempting to night wean is definitely ideal. If you've tried all of the foundation stuff and you're still seeing those wake ups every 2 to 3 hours, then yes, like you could take a look at like, I'm going to nighttime wean. But there is definitely a difference between shifting associations and kind of nighttime weaning. They do look a little bit similar when the association is nursing to sleep. But yeah, like there is a little bit of a difference. How to wean when you are still co-sleeping. So you can definitely wean if you are still co-sleeping, bed sharing, whatever you want to call it. We always want to look at temperament with this. Sometimes the pauses and breaks approach will work well. But I feel like the co-sleeping makes the weaning maybe a little bit easier, because you can actually like just lay down and support your child back to sleep. And they're already kind of used to just quickly nursing back to sleep. So when we're shifting sleep associations, we always want to layer in new associations. So depending on what your child likes, that could be rubbing their back, patting their bum, stroking their hair. I've been really big on playlists lately. Like you can definitely sing or hum a certain song. That's totally fine too. But we've been using lots of playlists and stuff for the girls, and they have specific songs that we play at bedtime. So adding those in can also be really helpful. And you want to do this while you're nursing your child to sleep for, you know, 1 to 2 weeks, depending on their temperament, before you even attempt to remove the nursing association. So again, you could do it for the first wake up. If your child is already night weaned and you're just looking at weaning in general, and maybe they still nurse to sleep at bedtime, then we would start with bedtime and then kind of look at the other wake ups. Naps can be a little bit difficult to do. So yeah, like, I mean, the weaning and the co-sleeping thing is just, it's not really any different. I just think it might be a little bit easier personally, because you're just laying down and supporting. If you're trying to wean a child in the crib, you're sitting, you're waking up a little bit more, all of that kind of stuff. Sometimes if your child is really seeking that sensory input, then, you know, you might actually have to get up and go sit in a rocking chair and support them back to sleep and then lay down with them. But I don't think it would look really any different than just weaning regularly. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree for sure.
Yeah. I don't think it's much of a difference, but what to do when your child is getting physical, so like slapping. So this is really just holding the boundary again. I, anytime my children have hit me, I just take their hands and I hold them, and you're not going to hit mommy. And then they get really mad, and then they have those big emotions, and then we support them through that entire emotional process. Obviously, if they are hitting at night and stuff, and you're tired, it's hard. But I mean, it would be kind of the same thing. I would just take their hands and stop them from doing that and hold the boundary and support emotions. Yeah. Do you have any tips on this? I think you said that Nora went through like a small phase. I mean, it's normal for toddlers to go through that phase. It's very common.
Yeah, she's definitely a little phase, but yeah, just supporting that emotion that came with holding the boundary of like, no, we don't hit, like you will not hit me. But she's never like hit me because I said no to nursing. But I guess it's just like maybe our like relationship that we've had, you know, it's not like she's ever hit, like when she got into toddler years, like when I say no, she would get angry and hit me. Like maybe with this family situation or other people's situations, like their child gets mad and hits. So I think that's like another thing to look at too. Like, okay, this is like the weenie and the hitting is like two different things. Like you have to work on why they're hitting and how to support that, stopping that boundary of no hitting. And then, you know, close into the weaning too. You don't, it's like two different situations you're dealing with. You're not like, okay, my kid's hitting. Why are they hitting? I have to tell them to stop hitting, and like other ways to direct them of like,
which can be hard when it's in the middle of the night, right? Because again, like you don't have that distraction aspect.
And you're not going to go to like a calm down corner in the middle of the night.
No.
So I think just practicing a lot. I'm sure if your kid's hitting you at night, they're going to hit you during the day. So I would just like,
around any type of boundaries and stuff. Exactly. So, and I mean, if they're just doing it at night, then again, just take their hands, hold their hands.
And they will stop. Yeah,
they will stop. It just, it's a firm, firm boundary that you have to hold for consistently and just not allow for it. Okay. And then the next one is weaning a CMPA baby, 1 year old. What is the best non-dairy milk option to offer? So this information is from my friend, Cindy, the baby dietitian. So you can definitely check her out on Instagram. But nutritionally, unsweetened soy is the most comparable to cow's milk. But you do want to remember that not all plant-based milk is created equally. Ideally, you want something fortified with vitamin D and calcium. We're aiming for 700 milligrams of calcium a day and 600 IU of vitamin D over the age of 12 months. Read the labels, compare. It is really, really important. You can't, I mean, unless it's fortified, I would have to look at it. I would have to look at the label. I'm not sure, but like you can't just offer some almond milk instead of whole milk. If you are breastfeeding, which I mean, obviously this is we're talking about weaning. You don't have to offer a substitute, but when we are weaning a younger toddler, then we do need to have some type of different option. Pea milk is also a great alternative if soy is a no-go for your family, but you would really have to up the carbs and healthy fats. The AAP recommends that toddlers between 12 to 24 months have 16 to 24 ounces of milk a day. 2 to 5 years, 16 to 20 ounces of milk per day. But definitely speak with a registered dietitian if you're not sure and you can't offer whole milk. Cindy is great. And if you have any other questions, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to connect with us beyond the podcast. You can find myself on all social media platforms at Alicia Dyshod. And for more parenting and sleepy goodness, hop over to Instagram and follow Eleni at Eleni Katz. Until next week, keep embracing the chaos and remember you're doing an amazing job, even if it doesn't feel like it.